On this episode of Football 301, Matt Harmon joins me to preview the NFC East, not the least, but a very juicy division to break down. The Cowboys, the Eagles, the Commanders, and the Giants. We look at all four teams. A lot of change going on in this division, but still, there's still some power here. I'm sure the TV providers would be very happy about that. But I'm also happy too, because Matt was great as always. See you guys in a sec. Hello, welcome back to Football 301. I'm your host, Nate Tice. We are continuing our division preview series. If you're doing the math, we are a quarter of the way through. This will be 3/8 of the way through. Very similar to my hat size, 9 3/8. But to join me today to do the NFC East, which is a very juicy division, a lot going on in this division, as the afternoon TV slot knows for the NFL. But to join me, as always, or at least weekly, my guy, Matt Harmon. What an intro. Great to see you, Matt. How you doing, bud?
Good to see you, Nate. Yeah, this is a really interesting division, one that especially recent events for one of the teams has really kind of caused me to sort of back away from the table for a lot of offensive optimism, at least. But we'll get into it. Yeah, NFC East is always interesting. It's a big spotlight division, the whole deal. So, yeah, man, I'm excited to talk about it.
Yeah, this is the Sunday afternoon TV slot. That's what this division is. This is what you see on Fox.
Yeah, especially for me, man. 25. I mean, growing up in the Northern Virginia area, obviously, I've watched a lot of Washington football, a lot of not good Washington football in my youth. Man, the amount of Mark Brunell, Jason Campbell dropping it off to Mike Sellers in the flat, I saw a lot of that. I remember growing up thinking, like, there's got to be something better than this. There's got to be something better than this out there.
With a chalk outline around him, just laying down on the ground. Yeah. What else do we see? We had the Steve Spurrier year. Yeah, no, Washington's got through some years.
Joe Gibbs, man, with the back-to-back timeouts. Yep, just staring off into the distance. So, yeah, seeing a lot of Washington football, and of course, and obviously all these other teams in this division. So, yeah, man, I'm in my comfortable stopping grounds.
A couple teams that no one ever talks about, no one ever focuses on.
Totally.
Like, you know, the one team we'll just start with. Everyone knows what the NFC East is. This is a classical division. This is also very interesting. Teams at a crossroads, a team kind of starting anew, two teams at a crossroads, I really should say. And then one team maybe making a push this year. It should be really fun. We're going to dive into the defending champions of the NFC East and also the Super Bowl winner of 2 years ago, the Philadelphia Eagles, who, no matter what their record is always going to have some sour taste from the offseason, from in some way, shape, or form, it seems like, whether it's questions about the new coordinator, questions about the quarterback. I mean, just really just listed off receiver drama. But it seems like this team is trying to turn a new page, start a new chapter, even with a new same head coach and same quarterback, like I mentioned, but some new changing faces on the offensive side of the ball. And we'll start on the offensive side of the ball. They hired Sean Mannion to be their offensive coordinator, most recently with the Green Bay Packers. Dontayvion Wicks, receiver from the Packers, followed Mannion over there. I can't remember which came first, chicken or the egg, the receiver or the OC, but he followed him over there. They made a little trade for that. Actually, a little trade I did like, as you know, with the Packers fantasy receiver situation, but one that I did think made sense, at least for the Eagles and what they bought him for. But Sean Mannion, more of a traditional, is what I'll call him, pro style, what we think of NFL system, or at least that's what projects to be. As a first-time play caller, he was just an assistant for a few years and was a quarterback in the league just before that. So it's really a lot to be seen with Sean Mannion as a first-time play caller. New offensive line coach, Jeff Stoutland, stepped aside. They drafted Mekhi Lemon in the first round. They traded away A.J. Brown. They drafted Eli Stowers in the second round. What else did they do? This team, it feels the same, and then there's also changing faces. This is going to be really fun to talk about. I know this. That's why I think I should just kick it over to you, Matt. When you look at this Eagles team, new OC, what are the questions you have? Where you stand with them? Do you have optimism, pessimism, question marks? Just you have the floor, because there's a lot to kind of dive into with this team.
Yeah, I think this is one of the most fascinating offenses to watch this year because no yes. matter what, they are clearly trying to transition from one world into another. You know, we know what the Jalen Hurts offense has mostly felt like throughout the entire time that he's been the starter there. It's kind of come and gone, obviously, with the quality of it, depending on the play caller. You know, they're really up with Shane Steichen. They're down with Johnson. They're really up with Kellen Moore. And then they're down again with Kevin Petullo. So it does kind of go with the flow of the play caller, which is understandable, of course. But it's still always kind of felt, and we've talked about this many times, over the years, it's a little bit of like the Russell Wilson offense is always the Russell Wilson offense. The Jalen Hurts offense has always been the Jalen Hurts offense. It's pretty clear based on not just the hiring of Sean Mannion, who most recently was with the Green Bay Packers, but also the players that they brought in here. Some of the guys that you were talking about, Mekhi Lemon, Eli Stowers, they are clearly, and even Dontavian Wicks, you know, they're clearly trying to move to a different world offensively. That's more in line with, you know, what people would say is the league meta right now. So I think this is a transition for Hurts, and I'm not going to sit here and say that he can't do it or won't do it, but it is something new that we need to see from him. Of course, there's no question about that. Also, by the way, they're undergoing a massive transformation in the run game simply because Jeff Stoutland, offensive line coach, run game coordinator, is no longer with the team, and he's been with the team since Chip Kelly was the coach, right? So long time he has been there developing one of the best offensive lines in the NFL. And we have questions along that offensive line this year, specifically like Landon Dickerson and Lane Johnson, probably at least like flirted with retirement recently. So that's definitely like right now they've got, we're looking at the depth chart on the screen. They got their front five guys. They're there. It looks good. But those are just two questions along the offensive line. But to me, this does come down to like what is Sean Mannion as a play caller? He's my X factor for this team this season. I thought he was just an obvious one to throw out there because his background is so fascinating, right? Obviously, as you mentioned, he has barely been a coach in the league. He was an offensive assistant with the Packers in 2024, quarterback coach last year. But then, I mean, he was in the league like in 23, playing like for multiple teams, Vikings, Seahawks. So he's kind of been around. He's kind of been everywhere. You go back to like his days as a player, not so much in the NFL necessarily, but certainly, you know, at college and or at Oregon State. You know, they were like launching the football. They were pushing it down the field, yeah. A very vertical offense in college, and, you know, kind of had some time under Norv Turner, like all these different, like very, just again, very, very different background as a player, as a backup quarterback. He's not the only time we'll talk about that in this division as well. So what he wants to be like, how much are they going to bring in from the old Jalen Hurts offenses? How much are they going to bring in from Green Bay or his various other stops? I think will be really fascinating to watch this year. He's one of the most interesting offensive coordinators in the NFL.
I agree. And there's a reason the Eagles can pay a lot of money to their assistants than they do. If you look at, I mean, that's why they have Vic Fangio. Vic Fangio gets top dollar. You know, he has his pick of the litter if he wants to just be the DC. And they can, so the fact that, to me, who they've gotten, they went and got Kellen Moore. Kellen Moore wasn't cheap. But they kind of promoted from within, you know, a couple times. Those both failed. And Sean Mannion, they went and got him for a reason because that wasn't a name I had even considered. Like I saw him getting interviews. I'm like, okay, yep, next one up, maybe in a year or two. I've talked about this a few times. I've been very weirdly aware of Sean Mannion for a while, mm-hmm. just because he was a Mike Riley guy at Oregon State. And that's what I'm familiar with Paul Chris. So I watched some of their offense when he was in college, gets with the Rams. We're kind of built the same, so I kind of always have a
you guys are
spirit kind of thing.
I've seen you at one end of prime at the combine and him at the other, and yeah, you guys are, you know, tall guys, pretty
tall,
pretty
gangly.
Yeah,
him and he's actually built like Tanner McKee, which is kind of funny. Like if you actually kind of saw them, like with Sean Mannion with the helmet on, he looks just like Tanner McKee. But really, everything you hit on,
I wonder what the betting line was on how long it would take Nate to mention Tanner McKee in the Eagles preview. Under 10 minutes hit, by the way.
I have, I would say, 14 bullet points in my Eagles offense, which is probably the most I have in any section. And I will admit, none of them say Tanner McKee on it, but I still brought up Tanner McKee in my opening my opening line. So it was on the front. I didn't even need the bullet point of notes. It's really when I've gone on Eagle shows, I've gone on national shows, I've talked about on our show, And people ask, like, what do you picture this? And it's like, my guess is as good as your guys's. And so me, it's just squinting because there's going to be some of the Jalen Hurts world, which is going to be a little bit what he likes. Pick a side reads is what they're called. And a pick a side read, it's not, there's pluses and negatives of it. Usually it's best when you're using tempo because you get the simpler coverages. But pick a side read is if I'm getting too high, I look at this side, you know, in a 2x2 concept. I look at one of the two man combinations. If it's single high, I look at the other two-man combination. And that's just the basics of it. There, again, like I said, Dak Prescott made a living off these in the 2010s, but it's really hard to build a top-end passing game just doing that because defenses are aware of it, and you need dudes because a lot of the route combinations, you need at least a guy that can win on the outside by himself. That's just, again, just basic theory. So there's going to be some of that. Like, I don't think they totally go away from it. I think they're just stopped. They don't want to build the whole boat anymore out of it. It's just more like, okay, maybe about two benches on this boat, you know, two chairs, and then the rest we build out of other things. You know, the under center run game, they want to get Saquon going. Saquon, like their best kind of feeling of this offense, you know, a couple of years ago outside the 2022 year was they got under center. They pounded the rock like 30 something times a game, sprinkled in a couple design runs with Hurts, couple pass plays that launch balls. And then that was the offense. And I've really just been trying to figure out what the formula will be, because if you're going to be more under center, you take Jalen Hurts' legs out of the equation. As far as design runs, that's just the natural give and take of that. Not to say you can't. The Matthew Stafford and the Rams last year, despite being heavily under center and never using Stafford's legs, they had the best run game of the century, of this millennium. So, you know, just like it's fine. You can do it. You just have to really buy into exactly what your offense is. And I bring that up because it's kind of like multiple reportings right now. So Jeremy Fowler, who was at camp, and he had a recent report, I think that came out today or yesterday, where he said, oh yeah, Hurts was running a bunch on design runs and he looks slimmer and he looks good. And I'm just like curious, because I'm like, wow, that's not what I would expect to hear. I would expect it to hear like, yeah, they're not going to use his legs as much because they're really trying to grow him as a thrower and trying to build this new offense. But I just looked, and I've brought this up before, but Hurts doesn't run as much anymore. He scrambles, but design runs, if you take out the tush-push, it drastically has gone down. So I looked on Next Gen Stats, non-sneaks, non-scrambles, non-kneels, design runs for Hurts. In 2022, which is the most explosive this offense was passing, kind of the balance of the run game as well, he had 67 design runs for 7 touchdowns. So this is, again, non-sneaks. Design runs, 7 touchdowns. 50% success rate. He forced 15 missed tackles on those runs. So, you know, about a quarter of the time he forced a missed tackle. Last year, 2025, he only had 27 design runs. Like less than half for 143 yards and 1 touchdown. And he had a 40% success rate on those. And he only forced 2 missed tackles the entire year on those design runs. 15 in 2022, 2 last year. So that's what it looks like. And maybe, I'm curious of your opinion. But to me, it does like Hurts is a little bit more indecisive as a runner. Like he kind of is his own running style because he's so strong and he has a little burst, but maybe not the high end top end speed some of the other guys. Like he's not as, you know, I think Lamar's so twitchy. Josh Allen's just a force of nature, but they all have their different running styles. His is his own, you know, unique way. But to me, eye test wise, that kind of tracks. Like he looks a little bit, I hesitate to say slower, but definitely more hesitant. Like he runs out of bounds a lot. He kind of tries to do the one juke and he's like, ah, screw it. I'll just get 1 yard instead of trying to like truck forward. So I was curious if maybe that's just me. And I got more stuff on this, but that's one thing I'm curious what the equation of that is going to be. Do we try and get him back to running? Do we just totally askew it? And unless it's an emergency 3rd and 1, you know, like get or 3rd and 4 and get him involved. I'm curious kind of what your opinion is on all that, what it looks like.
Yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense to me. Yeah, I wouldn't say that he looks slower, but the indecisiveness of it, you know, when a player is hesitant or indecisive, they can almost look slower in that way. Now, he's obviously taken a lot of punishment over the years. You know, I think that makes a lot of sense. So it would be... This is just what comes back to the whole Sean Mannion of it all, is that this is a guy that hasn't been coaching very long, and there's a lot to juggle here. Like, again, if we're trying to juggle... Yes. Living in this old world while blending the new world, and also, you know, the quarterback run game is a mixture of this as well. It's just a lot for a young coach to have to put it all together. So, I mean, I wouldn't honestly, not to jump ahead, but I wouldn't be surprised if this is a team, because we're talking about like blending like the different worlds from a passing game perspective, and we're, you know, remaking the run game, and we're also trying to add a quarterback run game into the mix here as well.
Yeah.
I kind of wouldn't be surprised if this is a bit of a slow start team, especially offensively, and then, you know, they pick it up from mid-October yep. on.
Yep, I agree with that. And that's what happened in Shane Steichen's first year calling, or Rose, mm-hmm. Nick Sirianni benched himself and then took over Steichen.
Yeah.
But that felt, they're trying to figure out what they want it to be. And that's what this feels like too. And it's a new O-line coach. It's not Jeff Stoutland, which could be good. Like, there, that's another thing you don't know. Yeah. Stoutland is so great identifier of talent, but he might have had limitations with the scheme he preferred. That might be part of it too. And this is kind of the last thing too. And again, for me, it's like there's good with some of this. Like, I even looked up early down under center passing, so play action, not play action for Hurts. And he's like, okay at it, but it's again, this is why it's hard for me to go like, yeah, lean fully into this. So this is the, if you're looking on the YouTube show, this is since 2021. This is Hurts's spray chart, under center, early downs, play action and non-play action. Notice all the throws by the numbers, about 10, 15 yards down the field, or I should say 15, 20 yards down the field. Those are sail routes. So everyone's saying attack over the middle and throwing seams and digs. Hurts is not mm-hmm. comfortable throwing those. And he's almost 30 years old. I mean, he's closer to 30 than he is to 20, I should say. Probably never going to be totally comfortable outside, maybe once in a while throwing them, because he had a couple last year. But I think this is where the play action game could really benefit, and also the personnel that I think the Eagles are trying to lean into. Mekhi Lemon's kind of been a non-factor so far with the hamstring stuff, but they want to get Eli Stowers involved. If they want to lean into Dallas Goedert, I know he's kind of on his last legs, but lean in him a little bit. If they want to put Devontae Smith and Wicks in motion, if they want to do slot formations, which is something we've talked about a lot this summer. So slot formations, again, are two tight ends, or a tight end and a fullback are on one side, and on the other side is the two receiver side. That could be something. That's the classic play action formation, especially in Sean Mannion's Mike Riley, you know, tutelage. Like, that was the classic play action formation. So there's like paths here, but again, it's not all totally conclusive. So this is the last thing I'll kind of leave it off. I told you I had 17 bullet points. I'm so sorry. But since 2021, 47 QBs qualified for these stats. He was 17th in yards per dropback. That includes sacks and scramble yards. So again, fine. I could live with that. First in average air yards to the sticks and air yards per attempt. So Hurts kind of launches these things, but he's also 42nd out of 47 in sack rate. So he takes a lot of sacks. His pressure sack rate's high, but then he's 10th in net yards per attempt. So even though he's taking sacks, he's, you know, pushing the ball to kind of, you know, compensate for that. 12th in EPA per dropback, but 41st in completion rate. Longest time to throw at 3.71 seconds, only one interception. And so if I sound like I'm going back and forth on this, it's because I am, because there's positives of Hurts in this system or doing these things, but there's also kind of some inconclusive kind of results right now. But also just that he's only had 107 of these snaps. That's 43rd since 2021. Like, Teddy Bridgewater has more of these snaps over that time period. Taylor Heineke has more of these snaps over this time period. Zach Wilson. Tom Brady has 261 of these snaps. Tom Brady retired, 3 years ago?
Yeah.
Jared Goff has 790. Jalen Hurts has 107 since 2021. So again, it's like those stats are decent, but it's like it hasn't been a big sample size. And what if the sample size doubles this year than what it usually does? Does the results stay the same? But I know I'm all over the place with this, but I think it just gets to our original point. It's fascinating. It's a fun,
it's really fascinating
test study, like case study on a team that, and I mean, is pushing for double-digit wins in a run in the playoffs, because that's where the Eagles are every year.
Yeah, no, just to put like an exclamation point on what you were talking about there, I do think that the, like, he's going to throw over the middle, is a little bit missing the forest for the trees here with the Jalen Hurts thing. He does have to throw more over the middle. There's this, you know, no doubt about that. Like, yeah. it'll make the offense better. And, you know, I think it's more of a willingness thing than a, you know, can't do it. I mean, I always go back to the Vikings game last year, not even just the Vikings game last year, but actually more so the Giants game before the bye, when Jalen Hurts and Devontae Smith were just cooking on these in-breaking routes, you know, a lot of dig routes under center, play action. That's why I'm really high on Smith this year, because I think he can live in both worlds offensively. But I actually think, and the more I've thought about this, the Sean Mannion and like Dontayvion Wicks thing makes a lot of sense, because as a unabashed, like, original Dontayvion Wicks truther. Watching him last season, one thing that was really notable about him is that they would, especially once Jaden Reed got hurt, they would use him, full speed motion at the snap and get him into the slot and run out routes off play action, a lot of outbreaking stuff. And I looked this up this morning. The Packers last season had 463 yards on play action passes throwing to out routes and flat routes last year. That was number one in the league. Number two was the Rams at 351. So there's actually a pretty sizable gap. Net yards per attempt, they adjusted net yards per attempt, they were second in the league behind only the San Francisco 49ers. And if you look at like the reception perception charts for Wicks, his rookie season, massive success rate on out routes. Devontae Smith last year, massive success rate on out routes. And actually, Mekhi Lemon, who I agree is probably going to be a slow. Like, I think he opens the season behind Dontayvion Wicks and maybe eventually pushes him for second in snaps. We'll just have to see about that. Yeah. But even him, like his, I thought it was a little bit overstated. How is he going to fit with Jalen Hurts because he won't throw in the middle? Mekhi Lemon made a bunch of big plays, again, showing the route charts on the screen, on these outcuts as well. So I do think that's the way to sort of blend these two things together, to overlay with your passing chart and some of the route charts here. This is where I think we actually will see the biggest effect from this offensive change, not necessarily the over-the-middle stuff.
I think that, and this is why it's so much fun too to parse, is that like you can affect defenders on play action, not just with in-breakers, like if that makes sense. So, like, you don't have to always throw where you're affecting defender. It's more just the whole concept. Like that's why, so a sail concept, again, a sail is a post, a corner from the slot, and then a flat route. Flood is three outbreakers. So with a sail route or sail concept, it's like a Kleenex is what it's called. it's like we just call like the sail route is the main route of the sail concept. I think that confuses some people sometimes too. But anyways, on that is that as long as I'm affecting with the action of the play action, if I'm affecting the hook defender and he comes down, or the safety who has to come down, whoever has to come down the run fit, I can still affect him. It doesn't just have to be an in-breaker right there. It can affect him and he goes, oh shoot, I didn't pass off quickly enough. I didn't, I didn't hit my match. I didn't drive on this, or I did drive on this. And then that does open up the in-breakers later. So again, it just doesn't, and this is something I wouldn't say I'm guilty of it, but I know I've been driving the charge a lot. I mean, I would consider day one, really. I don't know if I was the first, but I was one of the first to talk about Hurts throwing over the middle, is that, that doesn't mean like you can't be successful. It's just that it just becomes harder. And I always liken it to, it's like a guy that doesn't shoot threes in basketball. Michael Jordan didn't shoot threes. He got to the rim, he got to the rack and made a whole bunch of 15 and 18 footers. Like you can score in other ways. It's just that if you can't shoot threes, it makes everything else easier. Then you create space for everything else. That's why. And I think it gets bastardized. And I get that. I totally get that. It kind of loses contain, but there's just ways to make this work, even if it's not idealistic, or exactly what you picture, exactly what it's drawn up or what you'd prefer it to be. And the last thing, the spin series, which is the Packers kind of like whole little Jaden Reed motion stuff and split back stuff. That'd be something I think this team could use. I'm curious if that's where I think Mekhi Lemon could get touches on. Like, I think their personnel actually fits for some of that high motion stuff, and that could work with Hurts getting play action without having to go under center as well. So that was the last kind of little note I had on this offense. But anything else on the Eagle? I told you it was juicy.
It's a big one.
First opening bravado of the first team. Let's get to the defense, which is, think we both, I had him as a top five unit. Oh, do you have it?
Okay, I was going to ask you where you guys had them ranked when you did the show.
I had them fifth, I believe. We had them both in the top five. Or am I fifth or fourth? I had them fourth. I think this defense is freaking awesome.
I think it's going to rip this year. That's what I'm excited about. Yeah, I think it's going
to
be awesome.
This one's
year,
a little easier to talk about in the weirdest way.
By the way, it affords you a lot of, kind of leg room to not play around on offense, but find yourself on offense if your defense is this good.
Yes, that's a good way to put it. Yes, they give you a little breathing room to figure it all out. Comfort plus. They signed Tariq Woolen, traded for Jonathan Grenard, who's already hurt, which is kind of like I told Eagles fans, it's better now than later, I guess. But Reek Wallen coming on in, that was probably their biggest weakness last year, was their second corner, which is a good problem if that's your biggest weakness. And they learned how to mitigate it pretty well. Still have Vic Fangio. Still have a lot of their assistants are the same. Return a lot of faces. Just gave Jalen Carter a big deal. Lose Reed Blankenship, which I think is interesting to talk about, and Jalen Phillips, which made sense. That felt like a rental, but they tried. But this defense, like I said, I have them pretty locked in as a top five defense. There's some depth stuff we can talk about, though. But what captures your attention with them, Matt?
Yeah, I think this defense obviously is already good. They are one of the units where, you know, watch receivers last year. It's like them and the Chargers and the Seahawks, obviously not breaking any news. These are some of the best defenses in the NFL last season, where they are just suffocating passing games in zone coverage in particular. And they'll do a lot of like match coverage stuff. So I think the secondary is already really good. And I think the front seven could be better this year, particularly if a guy like Jahad Campbell takes a step forward. And Jalen Carter, like I know they just gave him a big contract extension. I think there's like another level for him to reach, like a nuclear season, you know, for Jalen Carter, like still somewhere in there. And we just haven't quite gotten it yet. So like those are two guys I have my eye on is, you know, can they go from, and obviously Campbell's a first round pick. Carter, again, he's got a big extension, you know, when I'm not highlighting any new names here, but sometimes that's how you go from being like a great defense, which I think this definitely will be. I agree with you, top five unit for sure. To just like the best defense in the NFL. We shut everybody down. We held everybody to like under 25 points a game or whatever. Yeah, I think those are the two guys that would be potentially on the docket to do that.
Yeah, I like that was the thing is last year was a down year for Carter, and it's still like very good. You know, it's still I mean they must be comfortable with him. Like his biggest question marks are just consistent effort and just, you know, anything off field. And they felt like they had the infrastructure to insulate all that. And obviously they feel pretty good about it to give them that kind of money. I mean, big money, big guaranteed money. But he has defensive player of the year upside. I mean, that's the long and the short of it. If he plays to his fullest ability, he takes over games. And I mean, this is what a Vic Fangio defense is all about. It's built through the spine. That's why they can go too high. And really, I've seen others talk about this, and the too high is not always quarters. It's cover three a lot of the times, but they rotate late. And this is something I've noticed, and really is we're going to talk about a team, the Cowboys, was what kind of like clicked this for me, is that they rotate late, so they get the best of both worlds. So what that does, though, is even though it's a quote-unquote light box, that safety rotates down to make it a quote-unquote loaded box. They do the best of both worlds. They kind of put that other safety in kind of no man's land, where he's kind of just beyond the linebackers, but he's not quite deep. And so it's kind of not technically in the box, but why that matters is on a lot of run plays, the receiver will have to sprint in and dig him out. I talked about this recently. And like, that's their job. Like, shoot, you couldn't get on the field at Wisconsin unless you're a receiver, unless you were digging out that safety. I don't care how good you were. And, but no, so, like, that's what I've noticed is that it's beating the receivers just by positioning without even extra effort needed, but also getting the benefits of keeping that guy deeper in coverage. They're at like 6-7 yards as opposed to 10 to 12. So I don't know. It's something I just noticed, but the Eagles are masters of it. But that also leads to one maybe possible weakness of this defense. The safety depth isn't great. Lose Reed Blankenship. They got Andrew Mukuba, who's kind of I also wanted to use him as my player spotlight. I'll cheat right now. He got dinged up last year. That's kind of his thing. He's really physical. He's a freaking awesome player. Heat-seeking missile. But he's not big. And he might get banged up. And they also are starting Marcus Epps on the back end as well. If Mukuba misses time, you know, you look at the back end, it's like, oh, you kind of squint a little bit. And I mentioned before is that the Fangio defense is built through the spine. The linebackers I like, Zach Bond, Jahad Campbell, I think is in line for a breakout year. This defense kind of fits him perfectly. But then to the safeties. That's the end of the spine. That's the tailbone, I guess. And that's kind of just like, I'm kind of just kind of looking at it a little bit, like squinting as far as depth wise, because the rest, the other nine starters, and then guys like, you know, I mean, Mauro Ojomo, Jalix Hunt, Nolan Smith, Jalen Carter, Jordan Davis, that's a sick front. Cooper DeJean's an all pro. Quinnell Mitchell's one of the best corners in the game. Reek Wallen's good corner too. Could be volatile, but he's a good corner too. I'd say that's eight good starters. And then Jahad Campbell's a question mark. That could be a good starter. And then Makuba's a good starter, but has to be availability. And then Epps is, I mean, that's, If you're getting what I'm dropping here is that this is a good defense as long as it just holds up on the back end, because there's a lot here. There's a lot of star power here.
Yeah, no question. Like I said, I think this is a good point about the safeties. Makuba's kind of more of like a heat seeker than anything else. Maybe yeah. A little bit of a different variety, but yeah, that's definitely a group that it should be spotlighted.
Did you see Kyler Murray got named Vikings starter? Which is,
I would have preferred this to happen 10 days ago, but. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know if I'm on deck for the NFC North preview or not, but I'm nervous about the Vikings. I'll just get it on the record.
I'm pushing the NFC North. I usually like to start with, and I'm now learning to end with it because it's such a good division. And I literally every day change my opinion on them, but not the Eagles defense. No, I'm trying to just think of any last things. They signed Arnold Ebiketie from the Falcons. I actually like that as a depth signing. Their edge depth isn't great. It's decent. They don't really have interior depth. So if Jordan Davis or Jalen Carter misses time, that's not great either. So I think that's maybe the best way I can kind of too long didn't read this whole entire section is a very good defense with a little bit of a fragile spine. And I think that's the best way to put it. But they also, if they're healthy, it's going to be a dang good defense with a really good defense coordinator that every year gets better. His defenses get better throughout the season, every single year. Right, you can look at the stats.
Yeah.
Every year after the first month, they get better. So you can set your clock to that. All right. Player spotlight. I already mentioned kind of my guys, Andrew Makuba, and then Moro Ojomo, who's in line to be the kind of next contract extension guy from this Eagles kind of depth piece. Really like him. Kind of a hybrid DND tackle type. But who's the guy that you want to spotlight here, Matt?
Yeah, mine is Jihad Campbell. And one of the things I'm just really watching is like his ability in coverage this year. 85th percentile wingspan on Jihad Campbell. This is not the last time I'm going to talk about this for another recently first round drafted linebacker. Okay. I think the archetype is we're talking about all these teams that do want to attack over the middle and everything, especially for a defense that does put a lot in the safeties. If you can get your inside linebacker, just to run the hoop, man, like just be the guy that goes down the chute in cover two and everything. Having the arm length really helps, potentially. So if he can become more of a weapon in coverage, I know they kind of experimented a little bit with him as an edge rusher at times last year. And obviously you're going to want him to, no thanks. Yeah. I'm good on that. Like, let's make this guy like a real deal linebacker. And I think, obviously N'Kobe Dean moving on, some other personnel moves. I think I'm with you. They're indicating that's the, that's what they're going for here.
I think I know what player you're talking about for the other one with the wingspan, because I love the Jihad Campbell shout. Such a fun player coming out of college. Really, the injury stuff was more of a problem for teams than I had realized pre-draft, but it makes sense. But this defense, and I have brought this up before, and I'll probably bring it up for, I think, our next team, is that these kind of hybrid guys that aren't quite – traditional inside linebackers, but they also have some edge ability. These Fangio defenses are actually perfect for them because they can just, we're going to blitz you a bunch forward. And then like, we don't make you do a lot of the coverage stuff, like where you have to run back, like you mentioned, but like you're athletic enough to do it if we need it. Zach Bond is actually the best example of this.
Right.
And Campbell has way more juice to him. And like you mentioned, a little bit more length, but Bond's just more heady. He clicks, even if he gets to 80% of what I think he could be, he's going to be such a good player for them.
It'd be a huge difference.
So that, again, very, very fun. Mention Makuba, mention Ojomo. X factor for you. I think we had the same, actually. It's the offense, right? It's just Sean Mannion, offense, everything that fits. Anything different for you? But that's just really what I have. All the new faces and new changes on the offense.
Yeah, more I thought about it, it just really is the fact that this is the first time, not even just a first time offensive coordinator, but just a real, fast riser up the coaching ranks that is going to have to deal with a lot here. So, and that's just the stuff you never know. Like, it's easy to sit here in the off season, which we're still theoretically in the off season, doesn't feel like it, but we are theoretically in the non-playing season, non-game season. And sit here and say, okay, well, he can do this, he can do this. He comes from this background, whatever, out routes off play action from the previous team he's with. Cool, cool, cool. Yeah. But then it's a lot to juggle once you actually get in the chair and you've never done this before and you're juggling personalities and all that. So, it's going to be just a lot is going to be on Sean Mannion's shoulders. Let's see what he can hold up here.
Just as long as you're on Big Dom's good side, you'll be all right. Oh, you know, God, that's what seems to be most
important. Is that
important
our X factor? Is that our player spotlight?
Yeah, that should be the X factor. Well, did you see that they head coaches apparently can designate somebody to be the flag thrower now when you challenge something? Because they're a bunch of cowards now. Yeah, the scoring plays and turnovers automatically reviewable, so you don't have to waste timeouts on that. Now we have someone else throw the red flag for you. Just cowards. Why do we pay them all so much money? Why am I giving you so much money? You're delegating everything to everybody. I don't know.
Unbelievable.
Right? I know. But anyways, why I bring that up is because Big Dom for sure is going to be that guy.
Definitely the flag. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Right.
Win total for the Philadelphia Eagles. What's your prediction? I went back and forth on this one.
I feel like they're... I'm going to go ahead and say they're a 10-win team. I feel like 10.5 is probably the over-under. Well. I think... I go 10-7.
I went 10-7. I also think it's 10.5 anyways. Yeah, I thought so.
Yeah, look at that. Boom.
All right. 10-7. That feels right. I mean, we're both went under technically, but that feels right.
And by the way, I think their season will go as we talked, where it's a slow start. I think they start clicking by the end of the year.
I meant to look at their schedule because that's if they can kind of get through the first, it's kind of, that's actually not too bad. So they start with Commanders. And then they go at Titans, Bears.
Oh, yeah. I just looked at this yesterday because I think Ray Garvin and I were talking about this on the fantasy show about how they could be like a slow start team. And I was like, well, then again, I look at their early season schedule. It's like Commanders defense, Titans defense, Bears defense in the first 3 weeks. Maybe they get off to a fast start, stall, and then pick it back up again.
Yeah. Then they go Rams, Jags, Panthers, Cowboys. Mm-hmm. Commanders again, Giants. Yeah, I know. So it's kind of okay, but it's not a gauntlet. I would say it's like in the middle of the pack. I think we even have 10th easiest strength of schedule right now, based on 2025 win percentage. But we're gonna take our first break, and we'll come back with a couple more NFC East teams. See you guys in a sec. All right, we are back, and before I get to the Cowboys and Big D, go subscribe to the new Yahoo Sports NFL YouTube page. Would seriously appreciate that. We'll be there all season. All of our videos, all of our shows. We've got our live shows on Sunday. We'll be there. We got clips in case you want to go a little bit team by team basis, but all the great content, Football 301. Check it out at the Yahoo Sports NFL YouTube channel. Make sure to subscribe there right now. Pretty please. That I really, really appreciate it. Thank you so much. But now let's get to the Cowboys. This is, I haven't talked about them in a while. I feel like it's a real blind spot, this Dallas Cowboys team. I feel like I really got to get poked and prodded to talk about the Cowboys the last couple months. But anyways, the Cowboys finished 7-9 last year? 7-8-1, 7-9. So that's 7 wins last year. They return a ton of new faces, or same faces on offense, I should say.
Mm-hmm.
They have the same O-line coach, same offensive coordinator, Clayton Adams. They still have Brian Schottenheimer calling plays as the head coach. He did not demote himself like in Denver. They got the same starters, 11 across the board, because even Tyler Guyton beat out or staved off competition, but actually it's not the worst thing because now they have a little bit of depth at tackle. They're my top offense heading into this year. I think you had them in your top 10 as well. What just kind of continue some thoughts? I've gotten a lot on the Cowboys offense recently, but what are your thoughts right now after a couple of weeks to simmer since we last talked about them?
I mean, yeah, I had them 4. You had them number 1. So you did mog me on the offensive rankings for Dallas. But yeah, we're both really excited about this unit. And I mean, what's there to not be excited about? As long as the two receivers are healthy and Dak Prescott's healthy and, some of the role players taking a step forward. I mean, this team is going to absolutely smoke people on offense this year. I love the way the run game is designed, and they could be even like if they get a little something out of Jaden Blue this year. They could be even more explosive. I think Ryan Flannoy entering the season as the wide receiver 3, as opposed to like last year, Jalen Tolbert and Kevontae Turpin. I think that's actually going to allow CeeDee Lamb to kick back inside a little bit more. Last year, career low percentage of snaps in the slot. Oh, by the way, like CeeDee Lamb wasn't really healthy all year. You know, what did he have the high ankle sprain in week 3? You know, I talked to him in February at the Super Bowl and asked him about, like, you know, you played for the high ankle sprain. Like, man, that thing can ruin your season. He's like, it can ruin your career if you're not careful with it. So he was clearly thinking about that pretty much all throughout the year. You know, I even just had some weird drops last season as well, which, I mean, I couldn't care less about. That stuff's just noise year to year. So don't worry about that. He could even be better than he was last year. When you have 1,000 yards and 3 touchdowns, like, I'll take the over on the yards from last year, obviously, because he's likely going to play more games. I'll certainly take more than 3 touchdowns. Pickens is still Pickens. He's going to be incredible. Yeah, this offense is going to crush this year, in my opinion.
Yeah, high ankle sprain is one of those. I don't think people realize how bad it is unless they've had it.
It sucks.
Because it doesn't sound
that
bad. It
sucks, especially for a receiver. Sprain. It sucks.
Yes. And it's a weird injury because you feel okay after about 3 weeks, but you don't get your pop back and the burst back until 6 weeks. I'd say 4 weeks at the earliest is when I've seen some freaks come back, but there's so numerous players. Now, I'll just throw this out for fantasy advice. When a guy has a high ankle sprain and they come back a week or two later, fade them. Doesn't matter the position, O-line, quarterback, receiver, DB, if you're in an independent league. It's such a hard thing. You can't plan off it as well. But the player, though, especially these guys who are the toughest humans you'll ever meet in your entire life, they're like, yeah, I'm fine. I had a high ankle sprain, and I wouldn't consider myself the toughest guy. And after a couple of weeks, I felt okay. I felt that injury for like 4 months. it feels like a weird knot in your high kind of calf, of just below your knee, on the outside of your knee. And it's a weird, weird injury. But anyways, I want to bring that up too, is that, God, I can go on a side rant here about Patrick Mahomes winning the Super Bowl in that long scramble against the Eagles with a high ankle sprain. That's why it's still, and then the beating the Bengals, I think the AFC Championship with a high ankle, still one of the most impressive things possible. No one talks about it. But then I have to bring up, you know, quarterback documentary guy, oh God, I don't want to say his name, having like a hurt pinky, and everyone brings it up about his poor play for 6 months. Meanwhile, a guy wins a Super Bowl on a scramble with a high ankle sprain, and everyone acts like it's nothing. So, sorry, I know who pushes through and who doesn't, and who makes sure to make a big deal about it, and who just everyone's wave everything aside. Anyways,
he said it, not me.
Yeah, I know. But I've talked a lot about this offense. If you want to hear why I'm so absolutely giddy about it, it's listen to the top 10 offensive show. It's not a bit. I think I'm super. I think there's the floor is high for this offense. I think the ceiling's high. They do the things you want an offense to do in 2026, which is kind of some old as well as some new. They can operate under center. They can do play action. They vary up their protections, which is something I think is very important. They vary their personnel groupings. You mentioned the secondary players or the role players. So if you just look at your starters and then you have that adjuster player. So if adjuster is either your third receiver, I think Ryan Flournoy is probably the best or one of the best wide receiver threes in the league. You got Spanford as your second tight end, phenomenal blocking tight end. Their fullback is Hunter Lipke. So no matter the personnel grouping, it's a plus personnel grouping. So if the defense is bad against 21, let's lean into 21. The defense is bad against spread and 11, let's trot out Ryan Flournoy. And we also got like Turpin to throw out there as like a gadget guy. Like they just have everything you kind of need to pivot based on the matchup. And I think the offense, the coaches know how to pivot and when to pivot. They can change tempos. That's something that this offense can do. Dak has all the the protection responsibilities, which is also something you want in a modern offense. The O-line doesn't really have a glaring weakness. Like Guyton is probably their weakest player, and I think he's still fine and has a ton of abilities still to tap into, and they have some depth there. The interior trio is phenomenal, and you see the blow up of defensive tackles in the league. Like, who did the Eagles just pay? Jalen Carter. All right. Well, we got Tyler Smith, maybe the best guard in the entire NFL, one of my favorite players at any position in the NFL. I think Cooper Beebe is going to have a kind of a breakout year. And then he's still built like SpongeBob SquarePants, but he's a good player. And then Tyler Booker was a great – he is, dude. And Tyler Booker is a great fit in this offense. So, I mean, my only question mark is, like, is Jadon Blue be anything? Can, like – another running back show up to kind of help out Javonte Williams? That's my only question mark. Like, Dak, I think, has been a top eight guy since. I know they are. They say he's actually mature now, which is like, okay. That means that guy was not doing protections. And anyone knows that's been following me in media knows I really appreciate Dak's game. I think, you know, that's why he's one of the guys I get frustrated when people are like, oh, quarterbacks have it easy. They don't do anything pre-snap. He's one of the best at it. And it's kind of cool to see nationally, like now the league kind of catching up to that or kind of appreciating it too as he's gotten older. Like you see the Jeremy Fowler rankings again. He was easily in the top 10. Mike Sando's tiers, I think he was 7 or 8. And I know that's not the end all be all. Trust me, I have plenty of qualms with those rankings. Like Aaron Rodgers at 19. Are you guys having a laugh? But I really do think that I look at that and it's kind of cool to see others in the league. I'm like, no, this guy does a lot that we want quarterbacks to do, the high-end advanced play. So long story short, he's easily a guy not only just win with, but win because of sometimes as well. And he has the weapons to do it. So I know I was going to say I was short about the offense. I just went 5 minutes, so I'm so sorry.
Well, can I say one last? Actually, I'll save mine for the X factors. So let's go to the defense, because I actually am really curious. Okay. I'm really curious to hear what you have to say about this defense and everything that's going to happen here. Because I mentioned in this segment about how the Eagles are one of the teams where they just like they suffocate people against zone coverage. I mentioned the Chargers, Seahawks. The exact opposite, polar opposite of whatever that is whatever the Dallas Cowboys were doing last year, where, I mean, watching some receivers, it's like charting them against the defense, I'm like, is this usable film? I mean, what are we doing, especially early in the season? What are we doing here? I mean, we
just neighbors got guys against that defense. Oh, Russell Wilson and neighbors. It was like
Wandale like Robinson, shop. Just like, let's forget about him as he's running a, you know, post route and splitting these two safeties. What are we doing back here? Oh. I mean, it wasn't great. I don't want to be mean, but it wasn't great.
It's one of the worst defenses I've seen in a while. And there's nothing I can point to.
Where I'm like, it really was.
Oh, they did this. And they changed it. Like the Bengals defense got a little better as the year went along. The Cowboys defense just stayed bad throughout the year. It's a bad combination of super predictable coverage with bad talent is like not going to, it's not going to work. Like if you want to be super simple, you usually have to have the talent to compensate for that, to overcome that a little bit. But,
They throw like Siobhan Revelle when he gets healthy. It's like, well, then we can start playing some man coverage. And it's like, oh yeah, this rookie that like just got out there. Let's just toss him into one-on-one situations with some of the best receivers in the league. That'll fix it. Spoiler alert.
Yeah. But all right. I do feel a little bit better about this defense, but we'll get into it. They hired Christian Parker from the Eagles. They only been a Vic Fangio guy in the pros, more or less. He's only been an assistant. He was like quality control for some other guys. I think Packers then would have been not Joe Barry. Who was that? But anyways, but he's been a Vic Fangio guy. Kind of know what he's going to run. Quarter shells, late rotation, really reliant on the spine of the defense, like I mentioned before. I'm kind of digging the post Micah Parsons kind of rebuild of this defense. Yeah. I don't know what it's going to be, and I'll get into it, but how high do you think they can reach? Do you think it's just going to be an Achilles heel for them again? Or do you think that this unit can actually be a little bit of a needle mover? Not saying top 10, but you know, a couple games, swing some games.
Well, here's the thing. Like if this is the 23rd best defense in the NFL, that is a significant improvement over what we saw last year. Cause like I said, I think it was worse. Yes. It's one of the worst defenses we're both on the same page here. One of the worst defenses we've seen in a while. So if they're the 23rd best defense in the league, that is a huge improvement. If they're like the 17th best defense in the league. Yeah. That's going to spot the offense a couple of wins. And I think this is an offense that could really tear through the league this year, as we both feel. So, and I do think that if things come together, they can be that type of unit. Now, certainly some questions. I'm glad to hear you say that you have some optimism about the spine of the defense, because that was definitely kind of a question for me. But, I mean, Caleb Downs, like being whatever he is going to be this year, I think he was the obvious kind of spotlight player for me. Is he just immediately somebody that is the straw that stirs the drink? You know, you're seeing they're really excited about him in training camp. He's had a really nice camp, you know, one-on-one situations with some of these receivers and everything. He's winning some of these matchups, and this is definitely iron sharpens iron type of situation here. So yeah, I mean, I'm excited about this defense, hopefully being, you know, like I said, 17th best in the league. I think do you think that's reachable for them? I mean, I think Quinnen Williams, like you mentioned the Micah Parsons trade, whether they, you know, fell ass backwards into it or not, I kind of feel like right now here, you know, mid August 2026, like I kind of feel like they've maybe won that trade. It's tough to say because Mike is not healthy right now.
They didn't lose it. That's how I felt. At the worst,
whether
it's a
wash. Won it or not, I feel much better about their odds of winning it.
Yeah.
Than I did, you know, a little bit less than
in the moment,
or a little bit more than 365 days ago, for sure. I think that's fair.
And maybe they're messaging, and they can't really do this. Jerry's always about, I'm winning this year. Maybe he was like, you know, this is for 2027, not 2026. You know, it's the Cowboys. They have an owner doing radio shows every week. The messaging is going to be a little inconsistent among its, you know, power brokers. No, I think this defense could get to, like you said, 17th, 16th, 15th, 14th, somewhere in that range, which if paired with an offense that I think top six is the floor, like really, like I think that's, I think no matter what, this is a top quartile, you know, top quarter offense. And I think that the defense, you know, along with, and also the other thing, the third unit, the special teams, the Cowboys special teams has been consistently good. You know, they have one of the best kickers in the game, maybe the best kicker, one of, I'll say there's actually some really good ones right now. Special teams wise, they've been like 14th, 3rd, 10th, 10th in DVOA. That matters too. Like that's the biggest Rams weakness. Their special teams still, I'm still squinting at it. But looking at this defense, I think there is a path and more of a likely path than I think people are considering that it can be at that average level, which if it's average with this offense and special teams, that's a contender, not just a playoff team, which, you know, spoilers for me. You mentioned Quinnen Williams, star, one of the star. Top 15 non-quarterbacks in the league. We'll put it that way. One of the true front defenders, worth the money, got the big extension, and I think it's justified. Guy that can take over early downs, stay on the field on late downs, good against the run, can gap shoot, can eat blocks. He's like one of the ideal defensive tackles like ever. And on top of it, supposed to be a great teammate and everything. Now, the rest of the defensive front, DeMarvian Overshown, coming back from injury has kind of like sparked a little bit of optimism for me because he was coming on before he got hurt a couple of years ago, kind of balling out. I think this defense, and again, this is where I was talking about those inside linebackers, either blitz or you have an end drop with an end dropping. He, I think, is going to be a great fit for that because he's best going straight ahead. And I think he's got a little ability. He's like a heat. I wouldn't say heat seeker. He's like a tractor beam. Like he's just like, I guess that's heat seeker too, but he's just like, he just like locks in and he destroys, seek and destroy type of linebacker. And now the other guy that they drafted, I thought maybe this is what you're hinting at, Jayshon Barham. He's another guy that was a hybrid guy in college. He was the edge inside linebacker type. He's a perfect fit for this defense. So what was a true one of the worst units in the league last year, the Cowboys linebackers, I think at the very least can be average and actually maybe a surprising strength, really. I think too, so I already mentioned the linebackers, but then the DB room, they really reshaped it in a nice way. Jalen Thompson, I think, is a nice solid starter. Kobe Durant, I think, is a great fit in this defense and was, again, not a star or anything, or even though I would say very good, but like another solid starter. When you're going from bad to solid, that's a big bump. Caleb Downs should be unlocked in this defense in the slot, do everything that he has to do. So there's just guys just kind of coming like where I'm like, oh yeah, okay, I could see this working. You meant Siobhan Revell, you mentioned. I actually really liked him. I'll talk about him more in the sec. Donovan Ezeraku is another guy I want to talk about in the sec as well. But then auxiliary rushers, James Houston, you can sprinkle him in as a DPR, designated pass rusher, to, you know, sprinkle in on third and fourth down because other guys can kick inside. So kind of squinting at this and I'm like, all right, we said it's built along the spine. How are the defensive tackles? Kenny Clark and Quinnen Williams. Okay, good. Can inside linebackers blitz? Yes, both of them I think will be able to. How are the safeties and the slot defender? I'd say the safeties are okay, and I think the slot defender has a chance to be good or maybe even better than good. All right. You know, you can see how I'm talking myself into this, and I will get into a little bit, a couple of the other guys as well, but that's why I can think there's a path to this being average-ish and a non-negative overall. And if it's a non-negative, wow. Like, who knows what this Cowboys team can be this year, because that defense was so bad last year.
Yeah, it's just, I mean, you talk about it all the time. It's, you know, crap to not crap, man. You know, awful to average. Huge, huge improvement here. And I see that potential for this defense, not just because of some of the players, but, you know, Christian Parker, I think, is just a little bit more with it than what we saw from the staff last year. So I'm really excited about this unit. Yeah, it's going to feel more modern. I like them finally kind of getting out of their own ecosystem too for a defensive hire, you know, which, you know, kind of to be fair, I was and I think everybody was pretty skeptical about Brian Schottenheimer as just promoted to head coach, but he was awesome, you know, as a play caller and obviously in collaboration with Clayton Adams and then also just relating to the players as well. It really never made anything a big deal. So, you know, I was kind of skeptical of that last year when they did really stay within their own ecosystem, but then, you know, they just kind of go get one of their guys in Eberflus last year, and we saw the results. So I like them kind of, again, trying to find something different here.
Yeah, and I think it was like, all right, former guy that's had, you know, head coach, he'll make it easy for me on defense. Like, I understood the line of thinking. Like, okay, he's a vet. He's got respectability. And I was like, oh, never mind. The game has passed him by. No. Maybe he should just be like a DB coach and assistant head coach type. You know, like some guys, that's just kind of end up what their role is going to be. Just player spotlight. Who you got?
Yeah, I went with Tyler Guyton slash Cooper Beebe because I think Beebe just being healthy. Oh, no, excuse me. Player spotlight. No, I went to the wrong one. Player spotlight, yeah, for me was Caleb Downs. I actually like that you brought up, you know, the rookie linebacker, I think, is way more interesting. As also is Malachi Lawrence, I think, is more interesting, too. Probably should have written him down here, but just all of their young players. And you know, I think I was higher on what Malachi Lawrence could be, maybe more so than you and Charles were during draft time. And, you know, if we're putting my edge knowledge versus, you know, Charles's, probably I'm wrong. So that's, you know, maybe not great for Cowboys fans, but at the same time,
I waved away every pick in the 20s. It's just like, whatever, have fun. Take who
but
you
at
want.
The same time, like what they need him to be is just like traits. Like that's kind of what they're essentially need from him this year. Just, you know, like, let it rip, man. So I do think there's some potential for him to be kind of like a designated pass rusher, just get after it off the edge. And I like this whole rookie class is really interesting, but obviously Caleb Downs, like if he's the guy that he's built up to be, what a coup for them to get him where they got him,
right?
You know, just what a huge win for them, and just someone again that can, you know, kind of be like a transformative player for a defense that desperately needed it.
He's a playmaker, but he also kind of gets everybody else aligned. Like that can be just such a nice steadying force for everybody. Like it really can. Just like he,
it just, when you have a safety like that, man, it just feels so, we're not looking at him to be like
a
splashy play. Yeah. Like, right. Like truly a safety layer to the defense, right? It's almost like what it's called. But we're not looking for him to be, you know, Nicky Manwari last year, where he's like this kind of more of a big play, like highlight reel machine, you know, the splashier moments, but just you're not thinking about the Cowboys safeties. Yeah, right. Yeah, exactly. You're not.
I think that's who he could play like, where make every tackle. Every time you get a blitz called for you, you're successful on it. Like, it's just like you never f up. Like, there's for a defense that had a lot of that last year, that's just, even if he has not even the splash plays, like he's just, that's what I like Downs, is maybe that's why he didn't go as high as we thought. It's just like the appeal of him is that how much it's like a really good center. He just makes everything else calmer around him.
Exactly.
I think that's the appeal of him.
And I mean, Cooper DeJean at times, he's running with Ladd McConkey on the post routes last year when they played it in that game, and just like with him step for step. And it's training camp and everything, I get it. But some of the clips that you do see of Caleb Downs, like, running with these Cowboys receivers in one-on-one situations when just about every other DB in the league, which is because these drills are so unfair to them, the one-on-one like drills in training camp, I feel
especially
bad even as a receiver.
Yeah.
Even as a receiver guy, I feel bad for the corners. I'm like, I get you guys are getting excited about this. Maybe don't. But again, Caleb Downs in these some of these situations is running step for step with these receivers. So if he can be that guy, that's
like CeeDee Lamb.
Right. Not just like all respect to a guy like Ladd McConkey, who I really like, but like this is a different level of player here.
So that's why I know we're playing the clip right now from our own Jory Epstein. And like that's why the appeal of him. He can man up with a receiver, but this defense, it looks a lot like man, but really it's match. But that's the appeal too. You can do that because you're not scared of your slot running with a receiver. That's why some teams got spooked out of match stuff, is they're like, well, my slot now, my safety playing slot can't keep up with the number one receiver, everything that you want. Okay, what if we put Tetro McMillan in the slot, or you put some Davante Adams in the slot in his prime? Well, now I don't want my third safety running with him, you know, but if you have a guy like Downs that can, that's what unlocks everything, or DeJean or everything like that. If Downs is even if he's just good this year, which is already a high expectation for a rookie, Like, that's so much better. I'm just chalking them up as average, which will be an improvement. So I'm like, in my head, just how I do the math of these things. So it's like, I don't know, that's an improvement already. What if he's actually a star? Well, okay, then that's several levels. That's what happened with the Eagles on their Super Bowl run. Their rookies turned out to be stars. And it was like, oh, wow, okay. That, and we got two of them. So my spotlight, mentioned him already, Siobhan Revell. Really liked him in the draft coming out of East Carolina. He had injury stuff. Kind of a slow starter last year with the injuries, but he has all the traits in the world. I'm going to be a sucker for this guy, this type of player. Just hasn't played a lot of ball in a while, but he's having a good camp. Again, if you find these types of players, like an ace corner or even a startable quality corner, gives you depth, gives you personnel changes that you can do. You know, if you want to get into funkier looks on third down, it just opens up possibilities, and it's just something this team didn't have, and that's why you draft him. Be it traits. And then the other guy, another year two guy for this team is Donovan Azuraku. His second year out of BC, kind of a weird player because he's power and burly, but he's not big. Like, he's like a 245-pound pit bull. I really like him. Like, he's got some pass rush juice, but he's not like bendy or anything. It's more just effort and strength. But I looked at some stats because I was like, okay, you're pretty good. I feel like you're pretty good against the run, and you're a contributor against as a pass rusher. You're not an ace, but like, you should definitely be on the field on third down. I looked it up. He generated the most EPA. Donovan Azuraku generated the most EPA on his run stops among all edge defenders last year. So when he stopped the run, it was the best plays for their defense, you know, in comparison to everybody else at edge. Put it this way. He had 23 run stops. So a run stop is a tackle that's a successful play for the defense. Aiden Hutchinson, who played 150 more run snaps than Donovan, had 24 run stops all of last year. And Donovan had 23. He ranked 12th among all edge defenders in stuff rate, which is a tackle for 0 yards or a TFL. He had the same stuff rate as Jared Verse. And Jared Verse, that's like his whole thing. Like, he's a, you know, bull rushing guy. He's going to get his 8 sacks, and he's also going to really pound you in the run game. So I think Azuraku can kind of surprise some people as a, again, another solid starter, but this defense has more of those than I even gave it kind of maybe credit for. And these kind of year two guys are kind of getting lost in the wash a little bit amongst the trade guys and the first round picks. So I just kind of wanted to bring him to the forefront again, because I do think he's a nice solid player and an interesting fit in this defense. All right, get on X factor for this season. You kind of already hinted at it.
Yeah, Tyler Guyton, Cooper, BB for me. Can this go from being a good offensive line to a great offensive line? I think BB being healthy and Tyler Guyton kind of finally becoming the player that he could be would be the guy there. And by the way, like, I'm thinking part of that would be, I think the passing game cooks almost no matter what. But their run game last year was really efficient. Across the board, 7th in EPA per rush on running back runs, 5th in stuff rate, 6th in rush success rate on their running back runs, 18th in explosive rushing rate. That's what True Media defines. Yeah, but that True Media defines that as a run of 12 plus yards. You know, that is where I do think the Jaden Blue thing comes into play. You know, for sure. Like, I mean, Javonte Williams is just become a really, really good player for this team in particular, but he doesn't necessarily have the field flipping ability, which Jaden Blue certainly can do. But also, if things are just blocked up a little bit better, I wouldn't even say this was a great, I think it was good, but not like a, oh my God, one of the 5 best run blocking lines. But if they could become that, because Guyton's the guy that he's supposed to be, and Cooper Beebe is healthy, in addition to just another great year from Tyler Smith and even Tyler Booker developing a little bit, I could see this being a run game that is a little bit more explosive. So lot to be excited about there.
I would say that's the one weakness of the defense or the offense is that, yeah, the explosive runs, or Javonte Williams, I should say. And that's where I brought up the whole receivers digging out the safeties. That's because that was the one where it stood out to me, was the Cowboys receivers. Is like, I love CD and I love George Pickens, but it's like, get to the safety.
Not doing that.
Because that's the guy making the tackle, and that's also on Javonte Williams that he can't make the safety. He can't make the safety miss. That's why Jameer Gibbs and Bijan Robinson get their – no. Yeah. That's why Jameer Gibbs and Bijan Robinson get their money. You know, it's because they make that safety miss. That's a run play is usually – it's we leave one guy for the back to make miss. That's like technically how it usually comes down to. On duo, sometimes it's the corner. On some of these runs, it's the safety if it's quarters. And – yeah, so it's, if the running back makes that guy miss all the time, they're usually a star. And even if just looking at right now, missed tackles for us, Javonte Williams had the same amount as like Chase Brown. And his rate was about league average last year. It was 23.1% of his runs he made someone miss. The league average among running backs is 22%. So about league average. But if you look at like Bijan, 28%. Jalen Warren's 32%. Jonathan Taylor, 29%. CMC, 28%. So they're a little bit higher. Ashton Jeanty, 27%. Worth noting. Devon Achane, 28%. Jahmyr Gibbs, 27%. So Kenneth Walker, 28%. All right, I'll stop. You guys get the point. All right, X Factor for me, pass rush. Just guys outside of Quinnen Williams that can just win. And I think they have these guys, but I think if this offense is what I think it's going to be, they're going to have some leads. They're going to get some shootouts. You know, they play in a dome. They're going to play some of these other good offenses in the NFC. Do they have the guys that just the aces? Vic Fangio defense is, you know, picks its spots to blitz, likes the creepers, the simulateds. Do they have the guys to take advantage of it? I think Quinnen Williams obviously can. Can James Houston be effective? Can Rashawn Gary be effective? Consistently effective, I should say. Donovan Ezeraku, who I just mentioned. Malachi Lawrence. These guys just all have to be pretty good. Not one has to be a star. They just have to be effective enough because I think Quinnen can do so much on the interior. But if this pass rush is good, like top 10, again, hold on to your hat because then we're really cooking with this defense. So that's just something I think can really push them over the top. All right, win total prediction for the Cowboys. What you got?
I mean, I think this team's going to win the division this year, and I'll give them. Yeah, no, sorry, I'll give them 12 wins.
Oh, I also got 12 wins. We're in lockstep. I'm also saying 12-5.
Damn, the over under is 9.5. Let's go way over on that.
Way over on it. I don't know. I'm optimistic about it. I really am. I know. I'm a little bit take committed, but I really have just gone back and watched a lot, and I think it's just some of their defensive guys can be surprisingly better than I think we're expecting right now. All right, to the Commanders, who had, I mean, let's be honest, they had a season from hell last year. They have injuries galore, including the Jaden Daniels and their quarterback, and they cleaned house. They got a new OC, new DC, same special team coach, new O-line coach, and same head coach, Dan Quinn. But at that offensive coordinator, they hired David Blau, or they promoted, who is the assistant quarterback coach, and another guy in this division that was a recent backup quarterback and is also coming in to maybe implement more of an under center play action heavy scheme. It's hard to parse these two sometimes because I've been on so many shows. I'm like, I feel like I'm repeating myself, and they have a new O-line coach. Like, it's just like so much like that, just repeating. But hired David Blau, promoted him, I should say. They signed Stephon Diggs last week. They drafted Antonio Williams from Clemson. I like him. And then the running back room kind of reconfigured that a little bit along with Bill. They signed Rashad White, Jerome Ford. Remember him? And also a tight end signed Chega Kwako, who I like that signing as kind of like a nice little middle class signing. But I think before we get into this, Laremy Tunsil, left tackle, big money left tackle, tears his triceps. And that's not a high ankle sprain where everyone thinks, oh, that's not that bad. Tearing your triceps is no joke. That's probably the whole season at the very least. That's like a 12-week injury, if I remember off the top of my head.
Yeah.
So like he's either coming back for the last month of the season or that's it for the season. And he's not just a left tackle, but a very good one. And this Commanders' old line had some parts that were interesting to me. So what do you think about the Commanders' offense, Matt? Because I feel like that was a long introduction because that's how many changes this team has had.
Yeah, I mean, this was one of the more fascinating offenses in the NFL to me. And now I suddenly feel like losing Laremy Tunsil, what, top five, definitely top three left tackle in the NFL right now. It's a huge deal. It's a huge deal because now this offensive line goes from interesting to maybe bad. Now, Brandon Coleman, who's my X factor for them, he did start all of 2024 his rookie year, and they were one of the best offenses in the NFL that season. Yeah. So, you know, there's something to that. But this was a guy that was like competing at left guard for them and wasn't necessarily running away with the job. So there's definitely something to that. And if you want to be this more, you know, under center, you know, deep drop back passing game, you know, you're going to need your protection to be really good as opposed to like we're in the gun and getting it out in the horizontal raid with Cliff Kingsbury. So just because he was, you know, not a huge problem for them in 2024 when they were a great offense doesn't mean it's immediately going to be that. But I do think it's the best path forward. Like just kick him out to left tackle, keep Josh Connerly developing as your right tackle, you know, keep everyone else in the same. Like, I think that's probably the right thing here. But they're breaking in a new starting center, too. So, yeah, I went from really – I wouldn't say like this is gonna, like we talked about in the offensive show. I think I had them on, you know, maybe 19th or 20th. But an offense that I was really excited about coming into this year to see what they – yeah, to see what they looked like. And now
– yeah.
It just feels so much worse. At the same time, I am really excited to see just what the passing game looks like because Cliff Kingsbury's passing game is just so static. Like, it really doesn't. Yeah, it is what it is. I've mentioned, obviously, everybody knows about the receivers only lining up in one spot. Now that I've charted Terry McLaurin's 2025 season, I can officially say there are five player seasons in reception perception history, 2014 to current, over 600 NFL players logged in the database. There are now only five seasons where a player has taken more than 70% of his snaps from one outside receiver position.
I can make guesses. Was it DeAndre Hopkins and AJ Green in Arizona?
I didn't chart AJ Green that year in Arizona, but I'm sure he is in my quest because I've gone against my therapist's advice and I'm tweeting about Rashad Bateman again.
I was going to say no, don't do it. I moved on. Too late. No.
I was really people. The replies to that were really funny. How they people were, you know, we're proud of you for lasting this long. But you know, when he's talking about moving around, I'm like, listen, I'm gonna add a little note to Rashad Bateman's fire that. From the time he came to the NFL, he has the third lowest slot rate in the league. You know who the lowest was AJ Green with the Arizona Cardinals. But anyways, I didn't chart AJ during that time, but I did chart DeAndre Hopkins. 2020 DeAndre Hopkins is one of the players. 2021 DeAndre Hopkins is one of the players. 2024 Terry McLaurin is one of the players. 2025 Terry McLaurin is one of the players. What's the common thread there? Yeah, it's Cliff Kingsbury. Hmm. 2015, Nelson Aguilar is the other one who was a 78% left wide player with Chip Kelly, another collegiate coach. This passing game is going from a receiver deployment perspective, it will feel more dynamic just by default.
That's it.
But it's still gonna be tough without one of the best left tackles in the world. That's where kind of I'm like letting go of some of the optimism I had there.
Like that's the thing. Cliff has his warts. And again, it's his hiring by the Rams is interesting to me. But it was also like, I don't know, he kind of got my first year there run with Jaden Daniels in 2024. I was like, all right, Cliff. I was like, all right, I have more respect for you now. Like, there's some more real here. Okay, cool. Like, you're doing some cool stuff. And then kind of just, I think just there's a ceiling to it. There is. And
it's
I know everyone's always
pack.
Like,
it gets you it on is. Base, and then but you're not round in third.
Yep. And when I feel like I've talked this about five times in the last 2 weeks, but you know, people lament, oh, quarterbacks don't get developed. I would point at Cliff as, you know, not developing quarterbacks because it's a crutch. We talk about easy buttons and all that all the time, you know, training wheels. That's what tempo and that offense is. It's because he's not learning, you know, the vernacular that, you know, the other guys are. Like, you see Trevor Lawrence getting so much better when they put more on him and he has to use more words to get through stuff. Some guys get just overwhelmed with that. Jane Daniels seems like a smart player to me. At Arizona State, he was running more of a quote-unquote pro-style offense. So I think he can easily handle it. But I get why you should have a package that's tempo and everything and all that, but there is a ceiling to it all. So I'm with you. This is just like – it's another, just like the Eagles discussion. It's just such a – like an experiment and just in broad daylight for everybody to watch. I mentioned, you know, David Blau, the new O-line coach is Darnell Stapleton. So Darnell Stapleton was the assistant O-line coach last few years. He's actually interesting because I have complimented him in the past and I just didn't know that. He was Florida's O-line coach in Louisiana Lafayette before that for Billy Napier. And when I was scouting Anthony Richardson and Osiris Torrance, I was like, man, I actually like Florida's scheme. It's really sound. They do some good stuff, like with the O-line. It's not sexy or anything, but everything's sound, like with the protections and everything. And that Stapleton was the O-line coach then. So I always have qualms with guys that jump from college to the NFL, but at least he's been an assistant O-line coach for a couple of years now. So it's not like his only experience, you know, is being the O-line coach now. But that is always just, it's a question mark that I usually weigh as a negative. And whether that's fair or not, freaking Jeff Stoutland was a college only coach before he jumped up. So whether that's fair or not is, you know, up to you to decide and up to me to decide in a few months. But I will say that I did like what he has shown as a coach in the past, especially if this offense wants to be more quote unquote pro style and under center and play action and all that good stuff. The other thing too, losing a left tackle, not great. The other thing about that is when you do play action, usually one of the tackles is on an island, usually shore up one of the other sides with the tight ends, with the action, with the motion and everything, the movement. Usually everybody else can get four hands on everybody. That's why you can do the long, long developing pass plays. And if you have a really good left tackle, it's even better because they're on an island and who cares? What if your backup is now in and you want to do some of those play actions? That's just another thing you have to think about. Now I have to give the backup left tackle some help when I do this action and stuff. It's just, it's not ideal. And everything I break down with this team, it's like, yeah, that's okay. But like the receiver room, right? Terry, Stephon Diggs, okay. Tanya Williams in the slot, okay. I like Luke McCaffrey as a dirty work auxiliary guy, you know, kind of does a little bit of everything. Like, okay, it's not great though. And I want to see the deployment. You know, it's like, I can't only get so high with him. John Bates, I like. He has a hamstring. I do like the Chigokwankwo signing because I think him and Jane Daniels will have some chemistry. Jane likes throwing those kind of tight end routes. And then the running back room, like I've always liked Rashad White. I don't think he's great though. And so I don't know. It's just like, I can't get over the top with anything. I think maybe that's the best way I can put it.
Yeah, me neither. And it's a lot of interesting theories, you know, and by the way, like I thought Terry McLaurin's definitely going to get like the most dynamic, you know, deployment of his NFL career, which is a low bar because not only is he like a stationary one side of the field player with Cliff Kingsbury, the seasons prior, he was basically just an X only option for the other offenses. But now Diggs at this point has become like a slot Z receiver. So I just I don't even know they really wanted to sign Diggs. I think Diggs is still good. It's actually remarkable how similar his 2024 reception perception charting was to his 2025 charting, because there's a freaking ACL tear in the middle of there, which just speaks to what an incredible player he is and like a true capital elite technician. But I don't know that they really want, because I think they wanted like Antonio Williams to step up and be that guy. But it's just like obviously he's a rookie receiver, you know, you never know, and Treylon Burks might be their other outside starting receiver. So it just, to me, I'm a little less optimistic.
Who's
about the
a
offense.
Slot? I don't college. Think.
He should have been. He should have been a big slot in the league, and then replaced AJ Brown at X receiver. And oh my God, that didn't work out. Couldn't believe it. So yeah, it just. I don't know.
Six months later.
Right. I think that this is a team that won't be. They will not be awful on offense. But I think that they could run into some roadblocks and they won't be like a top 15 unit, especially without Laramie Tunsil there. I think that's a problem.
Yeah. I just keep looking at their roster and going like, this is it. Like, this is year three. You guys should be cresting right now. And that's why I got so mad at what they did last offseason. They didn't learn any of the right lessons. And then the last thing I'll leave it at, and just kind of more issues I have with it. Well, Jane Daniels too. His strengths are he throws. He's very accurate. He's got good timing. I would say he has a good arm. And he's an excellent athlete. He's got to learn not to take hits. And that's where play action can really help that at times, because you insulate him. But also can make guys that usually are a little skittish, that like to scramble a lot and like break contain and break outside the pocket. Daniels can be kind of, you know, have that negative as well. So that's kind of the other thing that I'm kind of remains to be seen is how comfortable he is, because he can't scramble as much as he did. Like when he gets moved off his spot, he scrambles at like the highest rate ever of any quarterback, period, on record. It's not even close. So he just has to learn kind of like, hey, balls out, throwaways, you're building not just for this year, but you want to be playing in 8 years. And I think this could be a big step forward to that if it does click. And then also the tight end room. Chig isn't a great blocker, and John Bates is a great blocker, but he's always hurt now, apparently. And they want to do more pro style, quote unquote, stuff, 12 personnel, under center, all that, play action. What tight end's blocking? Ben Sinnott's not that. Like, so that's another thing. Like, that's another, like, it's just not, I understand what they're trying to do, but I don't think they have the horses to get there all the way. So, but yeah, let's get to the defense, who also made 500 million changes. They signed Adolfo Owe. They signed Kalevon Chaisson from the Patriots. Who else they got? Charles Omenihu. God, I go on with this defense. Leo Chanel, Nick Cross. They drafted Sonny Styles, which I freaking loved. Probably one of the few times that you could replace a Hall of Famer with a rookie, and it's going to be a huge upgrade. But that's where we were with Bobby Wagner in 2025 and what I think Sonny Styles is. Interesting pieces. There's something here. But I want to see, again, it's like their offense. I just want to see it all come together under Durante Jones, who's been a Vikings guy under Brian Flores the last few years. So your thoughts on this defense, what it can be, because it hasn't been great recently.
No, they were pretty rough last year to watch. And yeah, my player spotlight guy here was Sonny Styles, because I'm with you. He was like my favorite non-receiver in the draft class. I love Sonny Styles. And he's the guy I was thinking about when I was talking about Jahad Gamble, where this guy is 6'5", 97th percentile height, according to Mock Draftable for linebackers. He is 92nd percentile wingspan. And this defense desperately needs somebody to clog the middle of the field, you know, from a passing lane perspective, because they would just get Bobby Wagner at this point, you're just getting abused there. So it's a lot to, and my point with Jahad Campbell was, it's tough for these young linebackers, you know, like if we're talking about these receivers have to have so much on their plate now, as opposed to what they used to we're doing all this stuff over the middle of the field. Guess who's got to defend all that move around stuff? You know, guy, like more eye candy than ever. It's these linebackers. So there, it's a tough spot, but I kind of need, not me, I mean, I know, I don't care. They kind of need Sonny Styles to be like an immediate transformative player, because yes, we could talk about probably overpaid for OA, but should make the pass rush better. You know, Chaisson has definitely improved over the course of his career, low bar. But, you know, Trey Amos is banged up in camp right now. Leo Chanel, interesting role player. I think he'll help them as a blitzer, but like this has to be Sonny Styles is an immediate like superstar player. I think he can be. It's just tough to ask for a rookie linebacker.
No, it is. And I'm very excited to see him, but also the guys around him, this is why I'm squinting, but also squinting with a little bit more of, I do have optimism maybe a little about it. That you mentioned Chanel, he's a hammerhead, and Frankie Louvu, their other linebacker, is kind of a hammerhead as well. They're best just going forward. And it's funny, when Chanel was coming out of college, Wisconsin, shout out, is that I was one person that said this, but multiple people said it was like, oh man, he's best as, like, I can see him with the Patriots. Cause he, you know, Bill Belichick has always loved those guys that are hammerheads. They go downhill, they blitz forward. And then, like, in an inadvertent way, he got there because Dorrance Armstrong is a Flores guy. And so it's like, there's some Belichick stuff there, still in, like, inklings of that defense. So it actually kind of fits. Like, I didn't like it for every defense, like him and Louvu in the same linebacker room, don't love, but it kind of works in this defense that can be a little funky. We'll see. Sometimes you get the guy, the assistant of the assistant, kind of the ideas kind of get a little, you know, watered down, like a bad Xerox machine. But the back end too, that's where I have like some questions too. It's like, I actually like Trey Amos, but like you said, he's always hurt. Nick Cross is, I think, a fine starter. I like Mike Sainer still, as weirdly, as an outside corner, not a slot, which is backwards what I thought he would be in college. Again, a defense that fits his skill set, because he's aggressive and smart. So I do think this defense will be improved. You know, their details were so bad last year, so it can't get worse. And they just have enough juice up front. Like, Deron Payne's a good player, that they can be a little something. So I already mentioned this too. Sorry, and I'll just even get into my player spotlight. Dorrance Armstrong is also coming back. And he was having a career year before he got hurt last year. He had a 19% pressure rate, 5.5 sacks, way more productive against the run. He's always had good underlying numbers, but he was a classic, what I call we're getting long, so I'm sorry, but a Paul Millsap doctrine candidate, which is a basketball advanced stats reference about small sample sizes, very efficient and productive players will remain efficient and productive with bigger sample sizes. And I think there's some defenders that fall into that sometimes. And my other one was Josh Connerly Jr., who got a lot better last year. Weeks 1 through 9, 10% pressure rate. Weeks 10 through 18, 8% pressure rate. Much better one-on-one. About the same one-on-one pressure rate as Spencer Brown. Good tackle for the Bills. So I think he's a great run blocker and can really be a player that benefit from this type of offense as well. But you already got your X factor, Brandon Coleman. Let's just get to our win totals. What's your win total prediction for the Washington Commanders this year, Matt?
I bet they're listed at 7.5. And I kind of think 7 wins is perfect for this team, which unfortunately probably is not going to be enough to save Dan Quinn's job.
Yeah, I know. This weird transition year for them. I'm lockstep. I'm also set 7-10. I said 7-10 in my notes, so I got to stick with 7-10. 3 for 3 so far.
I would have gone higher than that. Yeah, I would have gone higher than that this time a week ago, pre-Laramie Tunsil injury. I just think that's a really big deal.
Yep. The highest I think I've ever gotten, though, with the Commanders this offseason, even when I was, okay, I'm seeing this, is like 9 wins. So I think this is their range. You know, that's 7-9. That's why their over-under is at 7.5. Middle of the pack strength of schedule. So, but yeah, another team that's kind of feels like at a weird crossroads this year, even though they're recovering with or returning the head coach. All right, we're going to take our last break and we'll get back with the G-Men. See you guys in a sec. We are back with the New York football Giants, not the New York baseball Giants. They are in San Francisco, have been there since the 50s. We got the football Giants. Let's start with their offense. Well, their head coach, they hired John Harbaugh. But then offense, I mean, it's the unholy trinity. You got Matt Nagy. You got
Greg Roman. I was really wondering how you were going to describe that.
The unholy trinity, man. Brian Callahan. It's like, you know, separate. Yeah. Okay, together, we will see. We will see what the unholy alliance looks like. But this team, a lot of former Ravens. We got Isaiah Likely, Patrick Ricard coming on over. We drafted Francis Malinoa in the first round, Malachi Fields on day two, returning Jackson Dart, the running back room. We got Cam Scataboo doing backflips. We got Malik Nabers, health watch, hourly, it seems like, health watch. Giants offense, this team, they're starting anew in the Harbaugh era. What do we think about their offense right now in 2026?
I have no idea, honestly. My instinct, by the way, as you read all those names
like
off
and like a guttural laugh for me. Sorry.
The former Ravens, and obviously, you know, even I know we all know this at this point. They wanted Todd Monken as their offensive coordinator. They settled for Matt Nagy. Yeah. I think they probably settled for Matt Nagy because John Harbaugh and Andy Reid go back, and you know, somebody needed to give Nagy the parachute so that Andy Reid could say, see, told you he's getting a play calling job. I don't know that that's totally what it is, but my instinct when you say all these things is just like, how often has that worked? Like former longtime successful coach just brings all his boys with him somewhere else, both coaching staff and players. I don't know. That doesn't mean it's not going to work. I
not
just
working in North Carolina.
Very fair point. Very, very fair point. He's not talking about Dave Canales, by the way. a different Carolina team. I
included North in there.
Yeah, we all know who he's talking about. But that just makes me a little bit nervous. Like the old coach gets the band back together. Makes me a little bit nervous. But I mean, you can squint at some of this stuff on the offense and see something here. To me, just how often is like how healthy is Malik Nabers? That's the question. Like Nabers, I think is ready to be like a tier one receiver. He's definitely not. He's not there yet. I know he had a really impressive rookie season with absurd target numbers. But it just how ready is he to be that guy? That's kind of the X factor for me this season, because with Nabers, if he's 90% of himself, I think they could be an offense that's, and him and Dart have basically played like no snaps together. He was hurt like halfway through his week week four debut last year, because if it's, you know, a compromised Nabers and then some of these other guys on offense, like I do think the run game could be really interesting. But where are you on Cam Scataboo? Like how good do you think Cam Scataboo is? Because like, and he's, I was kind of shocked to see how low I am in, I don't even have him ranked low in fantasy, but people are drafting him in like the 40s. Because I know he's really good last year. I mean, he's kind of like a meme player. Everybody knows him. So
yeah,
I'm just curious. Like, do you think like he could be a top level running back? I'm a little skeptical about that.
How high did you ever get on James Conner? Like he was always what, tier two at best, even in like steel. Yeah, and I think Scott was
thought
the
James
worst
Conner
James
was. Conner. Yeah, okay. That's I was going to say, I thought James Conner was better. Yeah, yeah.
Scataboo's a Diet Coke James Conner to me. Like, he's a worse version. Like, and I think that's a fine starter, but I think Conner is just a little bit better, a little bit bigger.
That's a huge home run for a fourth round pick.
Yes. And yeah, exactly. And Scataboo, like, it's like, oh, he got hurt. Oh, hopefully he just gets back healthy. What part of his run style do you think that will go away? Even if you – and I had Scataboo as a top 100 player. Like, last year's running back class was loaded. And I thought there's an appeal to him. He has great hands. That's another thing. Like, he's really good on those checkdowns and screens because he has such good hands. Another thing that James Conner is kind of underrated at. James Conner has phenomenal hands. But – it's like just one of those things. Like if he's already banged up like that, now imagine an offense that's just going to be nothing but run plays and heavy run plays. he's going to need someone to take some loads off. So it's one of those where the idea of him is better than what he actually is, because I just think there's real world limitations to that run style, especially a guy that you don't even need any sources or anything. Just watch how he does interviews. He's not going to change. This is what's made him to this point. What's got him to the league. Nothing's going to change how he runs, because that's what's got him to this point, from Sacramento State to Arizona State and now to the Giants. So that's the one thing, is that I have some reservations about, yeah, he might be out there and be very effective, but is it 6 games? Is it 4? Is it 10? I can guarantee you it's under 16. I'm not even saying 17. I'm saying 16. I think it's under 14 was even what I would really put it at. But having said all of that, I love this run game potentially. I think this run game could be awesome because I like the O-line. I think the O-line's actually pretty good. But I also like their auxiliary blockers, which I know this is the pod about auxiliary blockers. But Theo Johnson's pretty good. Chris Manhertz is an aptonym. He hurts men. He's a great example of an aptonym. Patrick Ricard can be a fullback or a tight end. So I know a lot of the hangup is, even Malachi Fields, one of the best blocking receivers in last year's class. So it's a lot of Isaiah Likely's fine as an off ball blocker as well. So it's a lot of guys that's like, all right, they're willing to do the dirty work. Juju Smith-Schuster's on this roster. He's a blocker. So I'm bringing that all up, but I think this team's just going to pound the rock 30-something times, maybe get Jackson Dart involved a little bit with the run game. Hopefully you don't get too many hits. And I even looked it up. Greg Roman's offenses, and I know he's the O-line coach, not the offense coordinator, but his offenses have featured some of the heaviest personnel on record. I can go back to 2013 in True Media. The 2013 49ers had the highest rate of two or fewer receivers on the field on early downs, 91%. Of their first and second down snaps that year featured two or fewer receivers. So that's the highest rate since 2013. And then the 2022 Ravens were second at 89%, almost 90%. So I'm bringing that up, that this is part of his, part of what he does, whether Matt Nagy merges with that world or kind of sticks with his quick hitting passing game, timing passing game, which I would not do with Jackson Dart. We'll see. No. So I'm curious if Greg Roman just has that much influence on it, because I think they could be some fun burly ballness if Nagy kind of buys into it.
Yeah, there's a fun world where it's the best of Roman and the best of Nagy, and I think that could be an interesting offense. But
the odds of that,
and how many universes it is the worst of both. There's also that too.
Right. And the biggest qualms with Roman and Nagy are that they play the hits too much. So now they're together, and now they're both kind of battling for the power. And so it's like, of course, they're just going to play their strengths. So yeah, it's not ideal. But the Roman run game could be really fun and interesting. I will say that.
I agree with
that. All right, get to the defense. New defense coordinator, Denard Wilson. I think this is the second time in a row that the Giants have hired the former Titans defense coordinator. Denard Wilson had some Ravens background. More than anything, it's just details. I think this defense has some talent, especially up front. Abdul Carter, to me, is a star. He also acts like how you want your edges to act, because he's total loose cannon. Brian Burns is good. They trade away Dexter Lawrence, and they still have some dudes up front. Darius Alexander is supposed to be having a great camp. Really like the Arvell Reese draft pick. I think he'll be a ton of fun. And they just have enough that I'm like, okay, there's some stuff on the back end as well to work with. But I'll just leave it one stat, and I'm done with the defense, basically, is – they have to tackle better. They have to have better details on the back end, because that was their greatest qualm last year, especially on third down. They were just a mess. Bad tackling, bad angles, slow to react. And this is a great stat from Next Gen Stats. First opportunity depth of tackle. So the first time they're able to tackle somebody, what's the depth of tackle? Theirs was the second highest in the league last year, 4.9. The Cowboys were the only ones higher. So they were late to react. So there was a perfect stat to match the eye test there. But that just has to get better. More than anything, that's what I'm focusing on with this defense.
Yeah, you went one level deeper from the stat that I had with them, because I was like, this defense is always worse than the sum of its parts. It always is. Every year, you get excited about it coming into the season, like, look at all these guys, look at this, and then it's never that good. It's actually usually pretty bad. Oh, since 2022, they've been one of the worst defenses in the NFL, and they're particularly bad against the run. 32nd rush EPA allowed since 2022, 31st in success rate. And I think some of that is the tackling issues. That's why I think DJ Reader, who's over 30, year old nose tackle, 330 pounds, but like I think really matters. Well. He was my player spotlight guy for the defense, like, because I mean, my God, like my theory on this, maybe I'm wrong, but like my theory on this is that you never get the, oh my God, this overwhelming pass rush that on paper it should be with all these collection of different guys. Obviously Dexter Lawrence is not there anymore, because they're always behind the sticks. They're always getting run all over. They can't really defend the run and they can't tackle. It's just like, okay, you can have all these cool pass rushers and maybe some interesting players here and there. But yeah, you know what? If your linebackers are slow to react and you can't clog up run lanes, you're not gonna have a good defense, and especially in today's NFL. So to me, I think that's like the thing I think is really like the key factor for this defense. And I think DJ Reader, you know, like you said, these guys do tend to age well. If you can come in here and be a difference maker that nobody notices, but why does this defense feel so much better? It's got to be the Harbaugh effect. No, it's actually probably just because they got a big guy to finally clog up lanes, and you know, maybe the linebackers are on their details a little bit more.
Nope, that you need guys like that, though. That's why, I mean, there's several defenses I've gotten so frustrated they never address just having a guy that eats space. Like, and you need a guy that can just play those. It's like having the blocking Y tight end. Yeah, he's not your star usually. Yeah, he's only going to play 15 to 20 something snaps, but you need it. Like, you need it to do everything you want to do, like, and to be hit the ceiling that you want to hit. So I love that shout out, DJ Reader, because I thought he's still an effective player. I did Malachi Fields, already brought him up. I think he's gonna be an excellent blocker. I also think he has some, if you want to hear more of my dart thoughts, we talked about some of the quarterback stuff a month or so ago, but with Fields is that he actually has some natural synergy, because I think he's best vertical and best on the breaking routes right off of those. And that's what dart's more comfortable throwing to the outside. Really working over the middle is gonna be something I want to see more out of them.
Stop routes, recurring for Fields.
Stop routes and goes, baby. That's what he's gonna be running. And they've already connected on some. I can even tell just by not even seeing video, just written word. I know exactly what route he threw. Recurring theme of the quarterbacks on this pod for NFC East. Yeah. Three of the quarterbacks have questions about working over the middle and play action and working under center. So we'll see which one comes to the forefront on that. Dart's also my X factor. Just everything I laid out is just, can he be consistent? I'm sure the Giants staff, it's a new staff, coaching staff at least, that wants answers on this as well. I'm curious if they're going to push him, if they're going to have big training wheels for him, if they're going to do interesting things on third down. I thought that's where Dart had success on third down, but I thought the scheme they ran for him was very basic. And I will say, the one time Matt Nagy stood out to me was 2017 Chiefs, when he let Alex Smith go bombs away on third down when every defense was playing the little picket fence. He did, right? It was so much fun. Does he tap back in? That's the last time Matt Nagy impressed me. That sounds so mean, but it is. So can he rekindle that magic into the 2017 ideas that he had on third down? Because I think Dart needs a little bit of pushing of the ball on third down outside of just go balls. Again, when I say pushing the ball, I mean digs, I mean seams, I mean posts. I don't just mean goes to the outside, because that's actually the easiest throw, even though it grabs the highlights. Win total to cap us off, Matt, for the Giants.
Yeah, to go into this, and I just to dovetail off on the Dart thing, I really feel like Jackson Dart's rookie season is a Rorschach test. Like, if you saw kind of what you wanted to see in his rookie season, depending on how you felt about him going in, and as someone that didn't have a strong take, couldn't care one way or another. It's like, yeah, I saw some good, saw some bad. So let's see more good than bad this year. But I don't really have strong conviction on whether we will see more good or bad this year. I really kind of think it could go. I totally think it could go either way. So to me, I bet this team is another 7.5 win team, because Harbaugh, you know, the whole deal. And I think they're, I would have probably had them below the Commanders before the Tunsil injury. Now I'm going to have them both, I think, as a 7-win team. I don't think any, and I don't know if the math adds up there, whatever, who cares. I don't think either of these two teams are disasters, but in Washington and in New York, but I don't know that either of them are making big steps forward this year. I guess they were 4-win team last year. 7 wins would be a big step forward. Now, to me, that would be progress enough, but I feel like there's going to be more hype on them than that.
Yeah, I'm going 6 wins. I'll go 6-11 for them. And really, it's over 7.5. And that's not like I'm totally out on them, but they need another offseason. You know, that's what they need. It's just what their situation is. And I think how you put it with Dart, you know, as someone that didn't watch him or study him or whatever, is that I kind of agree with you, is that I feel exactly the same, kind of how I did as him as a prospect, where really cool traits, not the super high-end elite ones like a Josh Allen, but good ones, but still has a lot to prove as far as a deep playbook, protecting himself, reading coverages consistently. So I know that sounds mean, but I feel like he's a rookie again. I mean, that's so I'm just kind of like, I will say though, his traits are fun and he's a great runner. So it's like, just see a little bit more. His deep ball does die on him a little bit. I will. That's one thing I have noticed. And I think it's because he just doesn't step all the way in because he's unsure about throwing it. But God, I could go forever. All right. Final division predictions for the NFC East. We've touched on a little bit, but who wins it and why do you think so?
I think I already spoiled this one, but in terms of who wins it, I'm going to go Dallas Cowboys because yes. I think they're going to be an offense that's one of the four or five best in the NFL this year. And I think the defense can at least get to even slightly above average or slightly below average is a massive improvement from what they were last year. So they're going to win it for me. And then I'll go Eagles second. And then kind of a toss up between the Commanders and the Giants. I really don't feel strongly one way or another as to who's the worst team in the division. But I probably would have felt better about Washington prior to the Laremy Tunsil injury.
Yeah, definitely. I will also go with the Cowboys with 12 wins. I think their offense, like you say, goes supernova this year. And I think the defense can surprise some people, especially in the second half of the year, and really pick up to not only just one that you win, you know, you tolerate, but one that actually wins some games because of to average-ish level. So going to go with the Cowboys winning the NFC East and maybe a little bit more, but that show is in a few weeks. We're closing it out today. We'll be back on Thursday with the NFC South preview with Josh Norris, my new coworker, my new teammate, which should be a ton of fun. We have so many Panthers fans on the staff now. So, but I'm Nate Tice. You can find me at _Tice. That's Matt Harmon. You can find him at Matt Harmon _BYB. You got anything you're working on? You got 40 pods a week. That's what you're working on.
Yeah. I mean, I'm working on a billion things, bro. I don't even know anymore.
I'll get you out of here. get back to speaking more words. I'll see you tomorrow. Actually, I think on the Fantasy Forecast, if I believe so. Yes.
That's right.
So
tight end fantasy preview.
Yes, love it. One of my favorite shows to do. But yeah, I'll be there weekly, I think, now. But Matt, great to have you. I'll see you next week for another division preview. We'll have another one on Thursday with Josh. Subscribe to us here at Football 301. Rate us 5 stars, pretty please, wherever you get your podcast. So Yahoo. Yeah, sure, you can listen to it here. But Spotify, Apple, all that good stuff. But also, please, 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 please subscribe to the Yahoo Sports NFL channel. Like this video. Please leave some comments. We'd really appreciate it. We're going to be there all season. Ton of content going up there. So please make sure to check that out. Thank you to everyone behind the scenes for not only just making us look and sound good, but just rolling with us, getting those graphics up. You guys have been killing it. So I really appreciate you guys. And thank you to everyone for listening. See you guys next time.